Hare Hare
The disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati could join and preach together, there was every chance that they could create a spiritual revolution within the sinful world. That had been the hope of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Bhaktivedanta Swami expressed that hope in his Vyas Puja offering, from the offering. When will that day come when a temple will be established in every house, in every corner of the world? When will the high court judge be a Gaudiya Vaishnav with tilak beautifully decorating his forehead? When will a Vaishnav winning votes be elected president of the land and preaching be spread everywhere? As he read the poem, its truth exploding in the midst of the gathering of aging sannyasis, some improved, some approved, and some were incensed. Their meeting, however, took no new direction. They did not sit down together and plan as he had pleaded. Swami Maharaj's poem was taken as another poetic expression or as an opinion. The God brothers were inclined to let the old wounds heal with the passing of time, to go back over the whole thing again and reconstruct the mansion as it has been before, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had been present, and to attempt all those ambitious programs. How was it possible? They were getting old. Some did not want to leave the shelter of Vrindavan. They would worship Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati within the holy Dham. If Bhaktivedanta Swami could do something more, let him go ahead and try. Bhaktivedanta Swami returned to Keshigat, thoughtful. For many years, he had been unable to take a leading part in the mission because of family commitments. In 1935 in Bombay, his god brothers had even asked him to be president of the Mat there, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had said that it was not necessary that Abhay Charan join them. He would come in his own way. Now, by the grace of his spiritual master, he was ready to fulfill the meaning of sannyas. The Krishna conscious world he had described in his poem was not a utopia, presented merely to incite his god brothers, a dreamer's talk of the impossible. It was possible, but in any case, he had to write and print Krishna conscious books and preach abroad. It was what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted. If his god brothers would not do it jointly, then he would do it. Right? Means, because the nature of every living entity is to serve Krishna. Every living entity is eternally a part and parcel of Krishna. So because of that, then that means if they're in good association, exposed to Krishna consciousness, you know, in a very nice way, then the tendency will be is they will take it up. Right? So easily, then everybody could become God conscious. It's just a matter of time and effort. Yes? No? So that association. So it's not just, oh, it's a nice plan, but that's the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is not to be away from Krishna. It's to be with Krishna. So becoming Krishna conscious is not, you know, a strange idea. It's the natural position, natural idea. So it can happen, but one has to be determined. One has to have ideas, plans, you know, then it'll work. What's happening over there? Haribol. Hello. What's happening there? Do you know what's happening there? Any idea? Yes, no? No idea what's happening. So you don't know what's happening there, and you're not listening to what's happening here. So then what benefit you're getting? Right? You know, in other words, if you're going to listen to what they're doing, then know what they're doing. Right? But you don't know what's going on at all. That said, on the wall is with the ashes, then they can put it in those places where the water sits. You understand? It means whatever you do, do it right. You know what I'm saying? Don't do anything just half. Commit yourself. Do something. You know, you're sitting here, do this. When you're playing, play. You know, don't when you're playing, don't quite do that. When you're here, don't quite do that. When it's work, you don't quite do that. Then what are you going to do in life? You understand? Things happen because you do it, so. Does that make sense? You all understand? Means if you can't do something here, you won't be able to do something when you get out of here. Because when you get out of here, you're the same person. You know what I'm saying? If you're spaced out, you're lazy. When you leave the school, you'll be spaced out and lazy. You know what I'm saying? If you can do something here, you'll be able to do something when you graduate. Otherwise, you're just... It's not that magically as soon as you walk out of the school, you change into something else. Maybe something, you know, with teeth and fangs and horns and like that, you know, scales, you know, like that. But other than that, then it's the same. Does that make sense? Right? Yes? No? Okay, so you have to focus. You're doing this now, you do this now. And then when this is over, you know, you got 10 minutes to kill each other and all that and get back together for the class. I'm not sure how it works. How does that work? In 10 minutes they kill each other and then revive themselves and then come to the class. How does that work exactly? Have you figured it out? Anyone figured it out? How it works? Okay. Some mystic city, I think, you know. In January of 1961, one of Bhaktivedanta Swami's Delhi acquaintances had shown him an announcement for the Congress for Cultivating Human Spirit, a convention to be held in Tokyo, May 10th to 20th. The theme was world peace through cultivating human spirit. International participants were invited. As soon as Bhaktivedanta Swami had seen it, he had wanted to go, although his main interest had always been the U.S. If Japan presented itself first, why not? And their invitation was in English. If they accepted his reservation, they would pay for his board and lodging at the convention hotel, although he would have to pay his own travel expenses. Bhaktivedanta Swami wrote to the sponsors, the International Foundation for Cultural Harmony. Is that like something to do with grits? Something? No? Harmony grits? Cultural harmony grits. And proposed a speech. His speech was, "How should one cultivate human spirit?" The General Secretary of the Foundation, Mr. Toshihiro Nakano, wrote back to him at Keishigat, expressing his high regard both for Indian spiritual culture and for his proposed presentation. Mr. Nakano also enclosed an official certificate, as he had requested, stating that Bhaktivedanta Swami was a bona fide visitor to their convention, whose expenses in Japan would be paid. They requested, quote, "to whom it may concern, that his passport and visa be granted in time for his May 10th arrival in Japan." Bhaktivedanta Swami then conceived a special project for the convention. The 10th canto, 20th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam presents a description of autumn in Vrindavan. And for each seasonal phenomena, the Bhagavatam presents a parallel teaching from the Vedas. For example, it compares the dark, cloudy evening of the rainy autumn season to the present age of Kali, when the bright stars of Vedic wisdom, the saints and scriptures, are temporarily obscured by a godless civilization. The chapter contains dozens of such examples, and Bhaktivedanta Swami proposed 50 commentaries to accompany 50 illustrations to be displayed at the convention. He began preparing the commentaries, which he entitled The Light of Bhagavat. He wrote directions from which an artist could design a painting to go with each lesson from a picture. 50 pictures and commentaries, Bhaktivedanta Swami felt, would make an impressive display for visitors at the convention. The convention organizers liked the idea. From the letter, as for your proposal to get pictures drawing by artists according to your suggestion, the Institution Department of the Congress will immediately take people disposal for it under the full consideration of about some specimen idea of picture which will be given to us by you, so I should like to get them as soon as possible. Bhaktivedanta Swami worked quickly to produce a 20,000 word manuscript, 50 lessons for 50 illustrations. The pictures were to depict the forest, fields, and the skies of Vrindavan during the rainy season, and the lessons were sometimes criticisms of godless governments, materialists, and false religionists, sometimes assertions of moral principles and God consciousness, and sometimes depictions of Lord Krishna and his eternal associates in Vrindavan. Everything went smoothly between Bhaktivedanta Swami and the sponsors in Japan. The problem was to raise the travel fare. He approached the likely sources, writing to the central government's Ministry for Scientific Research and Cultural Affairs. He presented his certificate from Mr. Nakano and explained his position as a sannyasi. In late March, the ministry sent him a form to complete and return. Time was getting short. When was the thing? It was May 10th. Okay, March. On March 29th, he wrote to the vice president, Dr. Radhakrishnan, with whom he had a speaking acquaintance, as well as a philosophical difference. You know that I am a sannyasi without any relation with bank. Neither I am attached with financing institution. But the Japanese organizers have liked my literature and they want me to be present there. He pleaded that since the great acharyas of India had formally presented their knowledge for the benefit of the world, the Indian government today should send representatives of the acharyas, quote, to deliver the message of Atma, or the human spirit, end quote. He also wrote the deputy manager of Scindia Steam Navigation Company in Bombay, reminding him of his 1958 offer to give a 50% concession on a ticket to the United States. After explaining his invitation from Mr. Nakano in Japan, Bhaktivedanta Swami pointed out that the full round trip fare to Japan would be less than half the fare to the United States. Trying all possibilities at once, and with less than a month and a half before the convention, he wrote to another potential donor, Mr. Bridgeratan S. Mahata, who had once expressed his willingness to send Bhaktivedanta Swami to South America when an Indian sponsor there had written expressing interest. At that time, Bhaktivedanta Swami had been unable to get the proper certification from the Indian government. But here, he explained, was a new opportunity to present the message of Vedic literature to an international gathering of interested people. And passage to Japan was less than to South America. On the same day he wrote to Mr. Mahata, he also mailed his completed form to the Ministry for Scientific Research. In answer to the question as why he was asking for a donation, and whether he had done so before, he replied from the letter. Before this, I never asked the ministry for any financial assistance, as there was no need for it. As sannyasi, I can ask for financial help when there is absolute necessity. Our life is dedicated to render service to the humanity at large for reviving the dormant spiritual consciousness. Meanwhile, his other arrangements proceeded with full cooperation from Japan. He had already sent Mr. Nakano the first 20 illustrative ideas from The Light of the Bhagavat. Japan is famous for artistic work, Prabhupada wrote, and India is famous for spiritual culture. We should now combine. He suggested they also print the text and pictures as a book. Mr. Nakano assured Bhaktivedanta Swami that they would be eager to meet him at Haneda Airport. They would be readily recognizable, since they would be holding a flag. And if he liked, he could stay in Japan for an entire month and hold local meetings after the scheduled convention. Mr. Nakano also asked a favor of Bhaktivedanta Swami, to solidify relations with the mayors of three Japanese cities. He asked that Bhaktivedanta Swami send letters to the mayors, requesting their full support of the Human Spirit Congress. Bhaktivedanta Swami immediately complied. By now it was April and no money had come. Finally, after a personal interview, in which he received a definitive no from Mr. Radhakrishna, Bhaktivedanta Swami turned to Mr. Nanako in disappointment. On April 18th, he wrote, "I am in due receipt of your letter of the 9th instant, and I am grateful to you for all that you have said to me. I am a humble creature, and I am just trying to do my bit in this connection, because I was ordered by my spiritual master, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj." From a letter. Continuing letter. "While I am feeling too much ecstasy for the reception arrangement you are doing for me, I beg to inform you that my passage expense, which is near about rupees 3,500, is not yet settled. I submitted one application to the government of India for help, and the copy of my application is also sent herewith. I also wrote a private letter to Dr. S. Radhakrishnan in this connection, and the reply which I have received is also enclosed herewith. All these are not very encouraging for me. I therefore saw the vice president today personally, but he says the same thing as he has written in his letter. Although the matter is not yet hopeless altogether, I am disturbed in my mind thinking what shall I do in case the government denies to help. I'm therefore seeking your good advice in this connection. Dr. S. Radhakrishna said to me that you had also invited him to attend your Congress, and he opines that the passage expenses might have been paid by you. The hope and expectation of the Congress is undoubtedly very great, and I wish that I may fully utilize this opportunity for general welfare of the entire human society. I have fully explained my views authoritatively in my statements already sent to you for publication, and the gist idea is expressed in the letter of the mayors, the copy of which is also enclosed. As a sannyasi, I have no personal purse for expenditure. Under the circumstances, if the government denies to help for the passage, then I will have to ask for the same from you, otherwise my going to the Congress will end in dream only. I have very little faith in the dealings of the politicians, and especially of the Indian politicians. From the conversation of Dr. S. Radhakrishnan, it appeared to me that the government does not approve of such Congress as are organized by private persons, and as such they do not participate in such Congress. I shall wait for the final decision for 1 week more, then the matter will be clear, yes or no." Replies from prospective donors in India were all negative. On April 20th, he cabled Mr. Nanako, "As you have developed a deep love for me, I dare to ask you to send me financial help to take me to Japan. I think you can immediately instruct your embassy in Delhi to do the needful and dispatch me to Japan on your behalf. I am feeling I am feeling too much to meet you and the Congress so that we can build up a solid institute for spiritual cultivation. I shall wait your instruction by cable to fix up my program. But Mr. Nakano could not help, and Bhaktivedanta Swami's efforts ended in dream only. In July 1962, Bhaktivedanta Swami changed his Vrindavan residence from Vamsi Gopal Temple to Radhak Damodar Temple. For 3 years, he had been paying the rent for 5 rupees per month for his Radha Damodar rooms and paying for the extensive repairs. Now the main room had electric lighting and a fan, and the walls had been plastered and painted. The room was 7 feet by 15 feet, with smooth plaster walls and a floor of sandstone squares of uneven sizes, the same as the stone tiles cemented in front of the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. The room was furnished with a small low desk, a kusamat, and a wooden cot with a rope woven surface to lie on. The view was not the panorama he had enjoyed at Keshigat, and the neighborhood was not so secluded. But now, without even moving from his room, he could look into the temple and see a portion of the altar and the 4-foot-high form of Vrindavan Chandra. The black marble Krishna deity, Krishna's Kaviraj, had worshipped hundreds of years ago. The main room was connected to the kitchen by a 10-foot-long veranda, which faced the courtyard, and from his kitchen he could see the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. So the place was superior to his room at Vamsi Gopalji Temple, because now he was living in the temple of Jiva Goswami, where great souls like the Goswamis, Rupa, Sanatan, Raghunath, and Jiva had all gathered, taken prasad, chanted, and discussed Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. It was the best place to work on Srimad Bhagavatam, because all the Goswamis, they had their own temples, and somehow or another they would all sit at Radha Damodar. That was where they would sit and associate, take prasad, discuss about Krishna and everything. So it's a very special place in that way. Like Rupa Goswami's samadhi and bhajan kutir is at Radha Damodar, not at Govinda temple, because right? he'd always spend his time there with Jiva. At 1 a.m., when no one else was up and it was very silent, Bhaktivedanta Swami would wake and begin writing. Since electric failures were not uncommon in Vrindavan, he would often work by lantern light. But in any case, a beam of light would shine out from his room onto the veranda. While inside the room, he worked under its brightness. While he wrote in stillness, sometimes a toad, as dry as the stone floor, would hop out of hiding and across the floor, exiting through the cement lattice of the opposite wall. Sometimes a tiny mouse would run out from behind a window shutter and hide in another place. Otherwise, the room was complete sanctified stillness, and the inspiration of being in the presence of the 6 Goswamis was strong. Above the open courtyard, the sky would be full of clearly visible stars. As he worked, the only sounds would come from the town. The only sounds would come from the town, perhaps of a dog barking in the distance. At 4 a.m., the temple pujari, who slept under a shelter near the deity doors, would awake, turn on an electric light, and with a long pole, clear the bats from the rafters. Okay. At 5 a.m., after waking the deities, the pujari would open the doors before the altar and begin Mangal Arti. He would offer a flame while a few resident devotees gathered and chanted, playing instruments. Usually someone would bang a gong, or someone else rang a large bell. Any sound from the courtyard carried immediately to Bhaktivedanta Swami's quarters, and the clanging bell and gong would suddenly reverberate against the walls of a small room. From his sitting place, he could see only Vrindavan Chandra on the left of the altar. Sometimes he would pause at his work and walk into the courtyard to see the deities and their artik. The altar was filled with deities of Radha and Krishna, who had been worshipped by Jiva Goswami and other Vaishnava acharyas hundreds of years ago. After 10 minutes, the pujari, having offered the flame and then a conch filled with water, would turn and sprinkle offered water on the heads of the devotees, and the ceremony would end. After working a few hours on Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktivedanta Swami would sit in his room and chant japa. As the morning sky turned from light blue, the stars would vanish. And residents of Vrindavan would arrive to visit the deities and the samadhis of the Goswamis. Old women would enter the temple, calling out Jai Radhe in broken voices. When Bhaktivedanta Swami opened the shutters, his room would fill with light. His windows faced a courtyard, but there were not so much windows as cement lattice work in the wall. Although passersby could not easily see into the room, the lattice work allowed light to enter. In the morning light, the room was clearly revealed. The arched ceiling, the freshly painted walls with arched niches, the floor of inlaid stone, Bhaktivedanta Swami's thin sannyas danda, wrapped in heavy saffron kadi, leaned against one corner of the room. On one shelf, he had placed a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. On another, a stack of books and manuscripts. The room's two doors appeared flimsy even when locked, and the whole room tilted slightly to the left. It was bare but peaceful. Often, anyone seen the rooms in Vrindavan? Yeah? Often sitting on the veranda between the two rooms, he would view the courtyard, the altar, and the deities, Radha Damodar, Vrindavan Chandra, and several other Radha Krishna deities awaited their visitors. During the morning, the deity doors remained open as a regular file of visitors turned the temple into a bustling place of pilgrimage. No one stayed very long. Some had rigid schedules to visit many temples and hurried on. Poor people and also local businessmen, their wives in colorful saris, all devotees, headed towards the altar, calling Jai Ho, Jai Radhe. After greeting the deities, they would disappear through the door to the outdoor area of the temple compound to visit the samadhis. Although in Vrindavan there were hundreds of small temple-like tombs honoring past Vaishnava acharyas, Bhaktivedanta Swami regularly visited the chief samadhis, those of Sri Jiva Goswami, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Within a separate area of the temple compound were the Bhajan Kutir and the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami. Bhaktivedanta Swami often sat chanting japa before Rupa Goswami's Samadhi. The line of pilgrims from the temple would continue entering the outdoor area of the compound, coming to offer dandabats to Rupa Goswami. Most pilgrims considered this the most important feature of their visit to Radha Damodar Temple. And even if they offered respect nowhere else, they would stop before the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. They would stop with folded hands and bow, chanting Jai Radhe, or with their hands in their bead bags, chant Hare Krishna mantra, circumambulating the samadhi. Bhaktivedanta Swami would sit and chant even after the early morning rush of visitors. Or sometimes he would walk to the nearby temples of Radhe Shamasundar, or Radha Madan Mohan. Always returning by 11 to cook his meal. As he cooked, and later as he sat to take his prasadam, he could see through the lattice work the samadhi of Rupa Goswami. Feeling Rupa Goswami's presence, he would think of his own mission for his spiritual master. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya are known as Rupanugas, followers of Rupa Goswami. Without following the teachings and example of Rupa Goswami, one cannot enter the path of pure devotion to Radha and Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was especially known as a strict Rupanuga, as described in the Sanskrit prayers written in his honor. Quote, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy, who delivers devotional service enriched with conjugal love of Radha Krishna, coming exactly in line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement that is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. End quote. So those, like that, the prayers that we chant in the Mangalacharan. So there's the translation. So he's always very fixed. Because Rupa Goswami is the head of our line. It means Lord Chaitanya is there, but as devotee, that Rupa Goswami is the main one. And so he sets the standard by which everybody else follows. So how devotional service is supposed to be performed, the mentality, that's then given by Srila Rupa Goswami. Right? So that's what we follow. So that makes us Rup Anugas. Right? Anuga means to follow in the footstep. Right? Does that make sense? So you can tell the difference between Anuga and the sound of, you know, old antique cars. Yeah? Yeah? No? Doesn't make any sense. Okay. Bhaktivedanta Swami's spiritual master and the previous spiritual masters in the disciplic succession had wanted the Krishna conscious movement to spread all over the world. And as Bhaktivedanta Swami daily gathered inspiration, sitting before Rupa Goswami Samadhi, he prayed to his spiritual predecessors for guidance. What's that? What is a predecessor? Up in the line means like hanging from the ceiling or something. They sit on the floor above, you know, the second floor.
In this case, it means the previous acharyas.
The previous acharyas. And what's a previous acharya?
They were here before.
They were here before.
Yeah.
But like Narad Muni, he's a previous acharya. But he's still here.
He's not exact.
Okay, I mean, you're sitting in that spot, so yes, he's not sitting in that same spot.
He doesn't come to see us.
He doesn't come to see us, are you sure? When the Prabhupada, they were in New York at Ratha Yatra, I think, and all the devotees were dancing, you know, they go crazy, the Western devotees, how they dance. And Prabhupada started laughing, and they asked Prabhupada why he was laughing, because he said, you know, Narad Muni had come to watch the Malechas dancing, you know. Thought it was amusing how they would dance. So you want to reorganize your statements here. I mean, see, it's like you've chosen a path, you're going down it, and you're doing a very, you know, I could say, you know, noble attempt at trying to establish your point, but you could probably restart again or something, or adjust the path taken. What's the essential element of a previous acharya that he had to have been before? You know, your grandmother was before. You know, so was Humphrey Bogart. You know, I mean, so many people were before. You can't explain it. Yes, you want to help him out.
Earlier on in our
parampara. So a little by little, a little later, or a little earlier, or something.
A person who teaches by example.
A person who teaches by example.
They set the example for us to follow.
Okay, so they're setting the example for us to follow. So the essential point is the teaching, not the time element. You understand what we're getting at here? So, in other words, you both basically understand what you're talking about, but you're trying to explain it through the wrong point. You want to explain it through teaching, not through time. So you have a teacher, your teacher has a teacher. So that means previous means, you know, where the instruction is coming from. So it's coming in line. So they may be present, they may be not present. That doesn't matter. That's not the element. Because instruction is eternal. Right? It's just always valid. If it's connected to Krishna, Krishna is eternal. The instruction is eternal. Right? So whether they're present or not, that's not actually the main consideration, right? Because Rupa Goswami is still there. We may not be able to appreciate it, but he's still present. So they're always, because they're eternal. Yes? No? So the time element's not exactly, it's one way of defining, but it doesn't actually get to the essence. Right? So that's the thing you have to learn to get to the essence. Right? It's the saragrahi, one who takes the essence. Right? You know, sar, you know, the cream off the milk, you know, so when nobody's looking, you're taking that. Right? So that's, so is that saragrahi? In one way it's the saragrahi, okay. So are you saying that as one of the members of the Green Cheddar Club, or are you just saying that as a general point? So it's not something you practice yourself. You do practice it. Okay. 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 And then what about the essence of instructions?
That's for somebody else.
That's for someone else. Okay. A different cheddar line or something. Yes? No. It's exclusively yours. You're the only one that can steal the cream off the milk. No. But if you're there first, then of course they can't, because you've already taken it. You take the cream off the milk in your bowl. So that means it's open that everybody has the right to take the cream off their own milk in their own bowl. So it's a very universal philosophy you have here. Very accommodating and you know, applicable to everyone. So very beneficial. Oh, okay. So that's very interesting. Hmm. Yeah. How would you have applied this one? In the same way. Okay. And you? Do you know what milk is? Do you know what bowl? Do you know the cream on the top of the milk is? Okay, so you're not going to source and stealing all the cream off all the milk. You're waiting till it comes to your bowl. So you're respecting the rights of others that they also can be saragrahi. Okay, very good, very good. You wanted to say something before?
I forgot.
You forgot. I see. Got bewildered by all this high philosophy. Very detailed, exacting points. Like that, see? Well, you got it, you bewildered them. Pretty good. Bhaktivedanta Swami's spiritual master and the previous spiritual masters in the disciplic succession had wanted the Krishna consciousness movement to spread all over the world. And as Bhaktivedanta Swami daily gathered inspiration, sitting before Rupa Goswami's samadhi, he prayed to the spiritual predecessors for guidance. The intimate direction he received from them was an absolute dictation, and no government, no publisher, nor anyone else could shake or diminish it. Rupa Goswami wanted him to go to the West. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted him to go to the West. Krishna had arranged that he be brought to Radha Damodar Temple to receive their blessings. At the Radha Damodar Temple, he felt he had entered an eternal residence known only to pure devotees of the Lord. Yet, although they were allowing him to associate intimately with him, with them in their place of, in the place of their pastimes, they were ordering him to leave Radha Damodar and Vrindavan, and to deliver the message of the Acharyas to forgetful parts of the world. So when we say forgetful parts of the world, which are those forgetful parts? Those places you went to you found so boring that, you know, that they should be forgotten.
The places that don't know anything about Krishna?
The places that don't know anything about Krishna.
Yeah, the places where nobody practices religion or there's no God-conscious people.
There's no God-conscious people. So what would be these forgetful parts?
They forgot about Krishna.
They forgot about Krishna. So, but by locale, where would these be?
Like,
Yes? Mainly outside of India. Mainly outside of India, right? Even in India, we can see they're forgetting very quickly. So if it's happening here by the influence of the Western culture, then if that's the culture is what's making the forgetfulness so greatly, you know, accelerating it, then how forgetful would it be for those who, that's their normal practice, right? Their birthright is to follow the Western forgetfulness, right? So basically speaking, it's the whole planet, right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, there's no shortage of anything in this world. Everything's there in plenty. What's short is Krishna consciousness. That's the thing that's hard to find. Yes? What do you think? What do you think? Yes? You think? You sure? I mean, other than breakfast, I mean. Or you have vision, so you see the future, so you're already thinking lunch? Or no, not that much vision. Okay. Yes? And you? You don't what? You don't what? You don't know. Does that mean you don't know? Okay. In June, the weather became intolerably hot, and one could not remain active through the afternoon. During the most oppressive hours, Bhaktivedanta Swami would shut his doors and shutters and run the overhead fan. By evening, the heat would abate. Again, a flurry of visitors would arrive, and in the temple compound, there would be evening kirtans. Sitting on his veranda, Bhaktivedanta Swami would sometimes talk with visitors, and sometimes they would come to his door and observe him as he worked at his typewriter. He was known in Vrindavan as a scholar and a sublime devotee, but he kept to himself as much as possible, especially in the summer of 1962, working on Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, it means, even though it doesn't make sense, that when it's really hot outside, it's actually cooler inside if you close all the doors and windows, right? If it's just a little hot, then by opening, then the wind and all that, but when it's really hot, you close them all, it's actually cooler inside. Doesn't mean it's not hot, but it's less hot than outside, right? And that's good until the afternoon, and then it gets real stuffy and all that, then you have to open again. But if in the morning before the sun gets strong, because the morning air is a little cool, so that you have everything open from the night, then the room becomes cool, and then before it warms up, you close everything, it'll remain that temperature throughout the day until about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Then it'll get all stuffy, and then you have to open it again. But at least that much time you get. You get like 9 hours. Yeah? What do you think? You don't know if you think. Maybe you think. Should we ask someone else if you think? What do you think about asking someone else if you think? Not sure. So you don't think about whether what it is actually that you think about asking someone else what you think. So you consider this not a topic worth thinking about. Or that's too much thinking.
Maybe only one of them thinks because he has the head, green head. The rest they just have but he's the head, so maybe he...
Oh, so he's the one that does all the thinking. So they're actually like clones or something like that. Means he's the actual. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. So what do you think about his thinking? So he doesn't think because you do all the thinking. Sorry?
I think he doesn't really need to think about the time.
He doesn't need to think because you've already thought about it. Okay, very good. So they don't have to, they only have to do, they don't have to, they shouldn't think, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I never thought of that one. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. That was his real purpose in coming here, to prepare the books he could distribute to the people of the West. Although as yet he had no means for traveling, even as far as Japan, and no means for printing books, these were the goals for which he worked. He had not come to Vrindavan to die and return to Godhead. Rather, he had come because it was the ideal place to gain spiritual strength for his main life's work. The exact shape of his future mission, Bhaktivedanta Swami did not know. But he did know that he must prepare himself for preaching Srimad Bhagavatam to the English-speaking Western world. He must become a perfectly equipped instrument of the masters. And if they desired, they would send him. Right? So that's the point of being in the Dham, to become inspired. I mean, inspired, you know, in Krishna consciousness, of course. Not, you know, it's okay, class is over, time for marbles, like that. Not that kind of thing. And now, you know how you have the saying that someone has lost his marbles, so it means he went crazy. So that means if he has his marbles, it means he should be not crazy or smart. Now, what happens if someone has a lot of marbles? Does that mean then he's very intelligent or something? Because I saw upstairs that somebody has this big, big bottle of marbles. Very large bottle of marbles. Like that. Yes? No? What is it?
National Reserve.
National Reserve. Wow. Okay. Okay. So he's the, so he just sits quietly, but actually controls the whole Gurukul economy. like the World Bank or something, the World Bank of Marbles. Okay. What's the rate? What is the going rate of a marble now? What do you get for one marble? Or you get anything for a marble? Yeah. Hmm?
Magnet.
You can get a magnet for a marble. No, how many marbles for one magnet? You don't know. Depends on the, well, we should ask the head banker here. How many marbles for a magnet? He's the man. Oh, okay. So he's the brains. You just organize it. You're the... Yes?
He has all the magnets. He has all the marbles.
He has all the magnets and the marbles, so he's got a monopoly. Oh, so he has the magnets, he has the... So these are two tycoons that are rivals of each other. Let's see. So they're controlling the whole market, these two. Get it. Okay. How many marbles for a toothbrush? You're not giving out toothbrushes. You only deal in magnets. Is that why somebody who's very big in the economics called a magnate? Because he has so many magnets. So he's the Gurukul magnate. Magnate. So what's the other guy? Is he the marbleate or something? Like that. Or what's the thing? What's that stuff, you know? Oh, maybe he's the marmalade or something. Yeah? Are you the marmalade? He's the magnate and you're the marmalade? I'm not sure. Everyone seems to be quiet. Is this like a real serious underground? Like, huh? No one's revealing anything. Otherwise, there's going to be repercussions afterwards. Okay.
Okay, so we won't say anything more. We'll just leave it and figure that if it's supposed to be revealed, then it will. Okay, chapter 11. Oh, that's the last one here. Yeah, now we're in the last chapter of this book. Whole list of what Prabhupada's writings in India, it's like goes on for pages. Yeah, it's like 8 pages, 9 pages. Wow. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.